Morning, Mr. Chairman. Tom Kirshner, Wildlife Division Director. Looking at your agenda, if I may, we have one more action item that would actually follow up from yesterday's conversation from the petition.
Oh, sure.
And this would be a good time, maybe while you're just finishing up action items, to go ahead and address that resolution. I believe John Kotelnik just emailed all of you the draft resolution, I believe it's 22-08, to address the petition that Mr. Justin Allen sent yesterday that you discussed and deny the petition. So in front of you, you would have resolution 22-08, and the three main items within that resolution, I believe, addresses the main points of your conversation for denial. The first one there would overlap other season start dates and potentially create some conflict with other users. The second one there, the current season structure offers ample opportunity and is not a hindrance to hunter recruitment efforts. And the last one there, this is a topic that should be further discussed as we go through the deer management plan revision as we begin those steps here in the near future as well. And so I believe those three bullet points would cover the majority of your conversations. And if you concur with that, then we would ask for your action in adopting resolution 22-08, which is the denial of the petition from yesterday.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Questions on this resolution? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion to approve the denial. So moved.
Second.
Excellent, thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all of those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Same sign. Motion to deny carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, John. Next up, Chad, you're going to come up and talk to us about the highly pathogenic avian influenza update.
Good morning, Commission Secretary Roebling, Chads with your Wildlife Program Administrator for the Department. Chris is going to pull up a short PowerPoint here, but yeah, a lot has happened since we met last month in purely regards to avian flu, and I assume you've probably read about this in the paper, heard on the TV, maybe got some questions from your public. So we just wanted to give you a quick update here. So that first slide there, obviously avian flu symptoms, very similar to the flu that we as humans get. We're dealing with a type A virus, is what they call it. So it's a highly pathogenic flu, which associates with a very high level of mortality for infected animals. Obviously, viruses come in various strains and degrees of transmission and mortality rates. Surprisingly, or the interesting thing, we've had, or at least the continental U.S. has had, a couple outbreaks of avian flu back in like 2008, 2015. There was documented mortality in commercial poultry, but from a wildlife standpoint, saw very minimal mortalities from those events during those two time periods. And this outbreak is much different, and we'll go into some of that here in a little bit. All birds can be vectors. That doesn't just have to be snow geese or Canada geese. It can be songbirds to raptors to whatever you might have. The transmission generally occurs from wild to domestic. And you've probably heard of a lot of the outbreaks of mortality events in our commercial turkey operations here in eastern South Dakota. Unfortunately, the outbreak of this really coincided with the huge world-renowned migration of snow geese through the Prairie Pothole region, right? And those geese flew right over eastern South Dakota, where a lot of these operations are. And obviously, there's a high risk of transmission from wild birds to domestic. Next slide, Chris. Disease overview. Obviously, it's the respiratory droplets are the primary transmission of that, no different than the human flu. Feces, contaminated feed, and obviously just the proximity of wild birds to these domestic facilities. Infected birds show some of the symptoms you see up there, no different than a lot of what we experience when we have influenza. Next slide, Chris. I don't know if we can play this video. I just wanted to try Travis Rumia, one of our staff members in Huron, got a short video here of a Canada goose that did test positive for it. Various symptoms. We did have a fair amount of reports from the public, dead birds, sick birds showing symptoms like this, and actually even had some reports of geese actually falling from the sky and dying. So it was kind of unprecedented for us to observe occurrences. So some of the history again, we've had outbreaks back in 08 and 2015, but these did not include these mortality events that we're documenting here. The current strain, we're working with the labs. They run a PCR test, which I believe is a molecular test, and it's sorted the H5N1, the high path flu. The next bullet there, you can see starting out. I think we had our first outbreak. I believe it was about 3 weeks ago, about March 13th, 15th. Is when we first started getting some occurrences of the disease within our commercial turkey operations, and then soon after that, we were getting reports of wild birds. But this data right here is already out of date. I think as of now, we've got 31 or 32 commercial turkey farms in the state. I don't want to speak on behalf of Animal Industry Board, but I just wanted to give you an update from the domestic captive side. You can see we have documented the disease in Canada, snow and Roskies, lesser stock, great horned owls, red-tailed hawks, and unfortunately bald eagles as well. So it is happening out there. You'll see in a later slide. We don't have a huge concern right now from a population standpoint. We haven't documented enough where we're really concerned about any of these species from a population standpoint, but time will tell. And again, these findings are the first that we've believe have been documented in South Dakota from high-path avian flu. From the human health side of things, obviously this is something we wanted to provide awareness and inform our hunters and other members of the public with snow goose hunting season going on right now. But, the Center for Disease Control and other health experts, the likelihood of that transmitting to a human is low, but there is a risk. I'm not aware of any confirmations of avian flu transmitting to humans, at least during this current outbreak. I believe there has been some over in Asia, maybe over in Great Britain or whatnot. But as of yet, I'm not aware of any detections of humans with avian flu. You've probably seen some of the news releases we did. We worked with our communication staff to get a message out through direct emails to our waterfowl license holders. We wanted to make sure they're aware of this, to take proper precautions when they're out in the field handling birds and whatnot. So disease response, what are some of the things that we can do? Obviously, not a lot of the things are in our control, but we have worked very closely with the Animal Industry Board, USDA, APHIS. We've worked very closely with them and their wildlife services staff. Out of North Dakota has been a great help. I'll get into some of that here soon. And, sharing information and having dialogues with the head veterinarian at Dakota Provisions, that's been a huge deal. Just disseminating information and helping, whether it's them answering questions we have or vice versa, that's been great. Back to USDA APHIS, we were getting a lot of inquiries from some of these producers as to what they can do to help minimize contamination or the spread of that disease to their commercial flocks with the spring migration going on. And we work with Animal Industry Board and USDA APHIS to help get some additional supplies down here, whether they were propane canyons or other pyrotechnics that we could loan and make available to those producers to help try to disperse and keep, migrating waterfowl away from their facilities, at least provide some type of buffer there to try to do something there. And a lot of staff, there's some staff here in this room that probably got tired of getting emails from me, but I was kind of the hub of getting requests from whether it was Hutterite colonies or other turkey producers. I would disseminate those requests out to the appropriate staff, and their staff did a great job. I mean, we were inundated there for probably 7-10 days, and staff worked a lot of hours and worked with a lot of people, and I appreciate their help. I appreciate USDA, APHIS, in loaning us some of those supplies. We just did not have enough at the time to help meet the need or demand for those services. So next slide, Chris. So we have submitted a substantial amount of samples from DIOS. We work closely with, we started out with the Diagnostics Lab at South Dakota State University. Any initial detection of the disease within a sample would then be sent to NVSL lab in Ames, Iowa, and then a follow-up lab or coordination with the National Health Lab there, Wildlife Health Lab there in Wisconsin. Obviously, we can't test everything. Once a detection is found within a species, we kind of stop testing there. We just can't test or pick up. It'll be dead animal on the landscape, but we're trying to document every report we get either from the staff or from the public into our wildlife disease database, and we are sharing information with other regional and national databases there to try to document and track everything. As far as removing dead carcasses of birds, I'm not doing a whole lot of that unless it does pose some risk to public safety or if we have a lot of birds washing up to a boat ramp or maybe next to a campground or whatnot. Next slide, Chris. This map here is from USGS office. This map changes numerous times a day, but I think I pulled this off the internet on Tuesday, but you can see the red dots would be commercial poultry. The green would be wild birds, and we do have a fair amount of detections of wild birds. They're just inundated, covered up with all the commercial dots there based on South Dakota. But I just wanted to give you a visual there of a geographical representation or distribution of detections. This map here would be coming from our wildlife disease database. Each of these dots would have data associated with it as far as time, date, location, species, number of birds, and whether that reported mortality was submitted for a lab submission, and if it was, it would be a lab submission associated with that detection there. So that's from April 5th, so a couple of days old. The next slide there, just another screenshot of our database there up on the top left. That bottom right photo was a photo that a gentleman from, I believe he's from Virginia, had sent to our department, and he had documented two dead snowy owls up at Cow Creek, and we tried to get up there and get some samples from them, but unfortunately they didn't get the email forwarded to us in time. By the time we got up there, we could not locate those snowy owls, so again, just to in summary, you know, we're confirming random but relatively small mortality events. At this time, we don't anticipate any significant population effects from the disease, but the time's going to tell. I'm not for sure how the disease may or may not impact some of those birds that breed up in the Arctic area where the disease might be able to survive and live longer. Once temperatures get about 75, 80 degrees, the survivability of that virus really wanes off and dies, and we'll just have to see how things progress up there, and time will tell to see what we may find this fall when birds start coming back. So, with that, just want to give you a quick update, and I try to answer any questions you have.
Chad, any questions from the commission? One from me. What is there an average life cycle of this virus? I mean, does it roll through a huge flock, and is it 10 day, or is it and just kind of linger for months and months and months?
Yeah, I'm not for Mr. Chair. I'm not for sure. I can't answer that question, but I do know that when the temperatures and the environmental conditions can allow for that virus to be present, it seems to thrive quite well. And obviously, when we have concentrated individuals, no different than humans. I mean, when you're sick, you should stay home, right?
Right.
When we all get together, that can be easily transmitted. So hopefully with some more
Thank you. Is there any questions from the commission? Mr. Lockton.
Commissioner Lockton, I think the sandhill crane migration is coming right through the middle of this. Any sign that they're affected?
Yeah, through the chair. Commissioner Lockton, that's a great question. In fact, there's a coordinated, national coordinated survey for sandhill cranes and looping cranes that occurred, I believe, last week. And they did document some dead sandhill cranes on the Platte River down in Nebraska. And I just emailed Rockland Marano, our waterfowl guru, the other day. And he has not heard of any detection in avian swollen cranes. But there was some concern there. Whether or not they got the results back from those individuals they tested, I'm not for sure. But there's something I'll let you know. Because there would be a concern for cranes, in particular, looping cranes. So